Blog Talk Radio.
Out on Punk Hostage Press, and you are listening to Poet Escape. Welcome, everyone. Today I'm broadcasting live from the LA Festival of Books, so I'm only armed with my humble cell phone today, so please forgive it. Please forgive me if I sound a little like I'm broadcasting from inside one of Andy Warhol's soup cans. Today I am very pleased to have as my guest literary artist Terry Wolverton. How are you, Terry?
I'm doing great. It's so nice to be here with you today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show. I call Terry Wolverton a literary artist because her talents and abilities extend far beyond writing. Terry has published numerous books of fiction, poetry, creative nonfiction. She's also edited 14 literary anthologies. She's the founder of Writers at Work, a creative writing center here in Los Angeles, where she also teaches and consults. She's an affiliate faculty in the MFA writing program at Antioch University in Los Angeles and is also a certified Kundalini yoga instructor. And another thing I love and admire about Terry is that she also collaborates with artists in other mediums, music and dance, to name a couple. Quite an impressive resume, Terry, and I know I'm only scratching the surface.
Thank you so much.
when I was going through all of your accomplishments, I was just like, well done. And really, you know, the fact that you reach out and collaborate with other artists, that was another thing that I just hadn't realized about you, but, you know, was in great admiration and was like, well done, because I think more writers could definitely, you know, I think that I love that cross-pollination of genres. To start off, could you talk a little about your poetry process called Disarticulations and how that all came about?
Sure, I'd love to. A few years ago, I decided that I was kind of tired of my normal way of making a poem, and sort of tired of my own voice, if you will. As somebody from an arts background, I'm always looking to do things I haven't done before, and I am not very patient with repeating processes and genres and things that I've worked with before. So I began to use this process that I always encourage my students to use, called fevered writing. And this kind of draws from techniques I learned from the writer Dina Metzger, the wonderful writer and teacher, as well as techniques that Natalie Goldberg has used. But basically, you start with a couple of words, and then for 3 minutes you just write faster than your brain is working, so you don't actually know what kind of words are going to come out. And that's a good process for anybody writing in any medium, because it will get the crust off your brain, first of all, and it will also help to open up your process of creating thinking. It gets you creative thinking. It gets you out of linear thinking. And you begin to write weird associations and weird juxtapositions of things, and I find I can really surprise myself. So I began to take some of those and take apart the language in them. So and I'm a little bit obsessive about it. I'll list all the nouns in a column and all the verbs in a column and so on and so forth with the parts of speech. And then this becomes the lexicon from which I can create the poem. So I don't start with an idea for a poem. I want to write about the war or I want to write about love, I start with those words and I don't let myself add any words. I can change verb tenses if I want. But I begin to just recombine those words to come up with unusual, sometimes quite surprising results. And I find it great fun. So I decided I would start making this process public, and I created a blog called disarticulations.wordpress.com. And I've been inviting people to send me prompts and use those for the fevered writing, and then inviting poets and non-poets to write their own poems, either working from the prompts themselves or working from the lists of words, or even poems that are just responding to the poem that I've written. Because I think I always love the way poetry talks to the poems talk to other poems, and I'm interested to kind of stimulate that in a conscious way within our poetry community.
Nice. How would you feel poems that you've written through this process differ from poems, earlier poems or different poems where you've sat down to, you know, very specifically write, address a certain topic?
Oh, I should leave that to the literary critics to take that apart. But, you know, I think that starting a poem with an intention, almost inevitably one writes toward that intention. And so, at least for me, I'm precluding options. It's not about that. That doesn't belong. Oh, I can't mention that. You know, and it's kind of almost a narrowing process. And you can come up with a great poem in that way. Don't get me wrong, but starting with just a list of words, there are no preconceived ideas. There is no destination that you're writing toward, and I find that it's a widening process instead, and that all kinds of things that you wouldn't expect to be together can find their way into one of those poems.
Interesting. Do you ever use this process when you write your fiction or nonfiction, or is this something that you generally use for your poetry?
Well, because it's so labor-intensive, I have often used the fevered writing as a way to get started on any kind of writing, and really I encourage anybody who's writing to use that technique. But the disarticulation process, it's so labor-intensive. I would have to really be in a in a particular mood to want to
right.
tackle that for a longer work
right.
than a poem.
You know, I attended one of your workshops where you did some fevered writing with your students, and the process reminded me of how liberating it can be and sometimes how challenging it can be to sit down and to write for a period of time where you don't know what is going to come out, and as you said, you know, when you described the process, to bypass your linear brain and to access your creative brain. And I'm curious, you know, with the students that you work with, how do they respond to the whole process? Is there, you know, do certain fears come up? Do you find that they find it's a completely liberating experience?
Well, you know, students are like everybody else. They're all different from one another.
Right.
I would say the people who have been sort of the best students and in their lives and gotten the best grades find it the most challenging,
right?
Because they've been trained to be very deliberative and to think very carefully and to do it correctly. And you know, one of the things that I'm always trying to help them do is to throw all that out with lovely, proper respect to English teachers and all other kinds of teachers, but it doesn't necessarily help you when you're trying to get to something new. And for me, I think that writing today is really the quest to bring forward new ideas or new ways of describing the world or giving people new experiences when they encounter the work, rather than simply replicating the stories and the way we tell stories and the structures that we're also very well inculcated with.
Right, right. You have an essay that I recently read, beautiful essay called "Nature is Burning." I was hoping you might be able to read that for us.
Sure. This is from a book that I published this year called Wounded World, and the whole book is a series of linked lyric essays, and here's this one. Nature is burning. The city is burning. The brain is burning. Morning fog burns off before first light. The breath of God is puffed away, drifts in the direction of the desert. Smoke hangs in the atmosphere, coats our throats black as we kneel in morning prayers. And who hears them now? The father is dead. He always had a deaf ear. The child must learn to breathe again, breathe in smoke that covers the city like a cloud. She fears for the wildlife, deer and coyote, rabbit and squirrel, bobcat, snake, and all the birds. Where will they go now that their habitat is burned? She asks, but their world is hidden from her. She is deaf to both their pleas and their warnings. She is powerless to help. The father is dead, father she never knew, father who forgot her, whom she forgot. She has looked for him in the hands of the women she's loved, but never found him. Finally, she was told, "Father yourself." Finally, she was told, "God yourself," ending another fruitless search. Nature is burning. Its creatures run, hooves and paws over scorched terrain, panicked to escape the blaze. Their fear enters her bloodstream. The city is burning. Night glows orange. Whole hillsides alive with jewels of flame. We all stumble out onto the sidewalks to gape at the grisly spectacle that thrills with its terrible beauty. Huddle together on pavement to bear witness to the beginning of something we can't name. The brain is burning too, but no one comes to watch. All circuits are busy. Circuits are jammed, yet vast territories are uninhabitable. The roads are closed, memories evacuated or lost. Early evening fog settles into the basin, softens the light, blurs the scarred hillsides, still smoldering memory of fire. She took up residence in the blasted city, city that had lost its nature. She undertook a study of her own lost nature. She mapped the inaccessible reaches of the brain. She undertook a study of what it means to father. She undertook a study of what it means to God. She began to investigate the law of karma. Karma is burning. Father is dead, and there are big shoes to fill. All that has held us in form is being stripped away, incinerated in an uncontainable blaze. We taste ash at the back of our throats, hear ringing in our deaf ears, huddle together like animals in the glowing aftermath.
It's beautiful, Terry. I love, there are so many things I love about the piece, the details. All the exquisite details. I also love how you start talking about the nature, the outside nature of Los Angeles, but then you also explore your own personal inner nature. One way to say it, I guess. It's just absolutely beautiful. Thanks so much for sharing that.
Thank you.
You know, because you write in so many genres, fiction, poetry, creative, nonfiction, lyric essays, I'm curious how easy it is for you to go from one genre to the other. And also, when you sit down to write, how conscious are you of, you know, today I'm going to write in this particular style, or is it more of an organic process?
Well, I really love to have a project, and it's usually clear to me what the project wants to be. Not always. Some years ago, I published a book, Embers, and when I began it, I thought I was going to write historical fiction, and I got about 5 pages into it, and I was bored to death, and I just didn't know what I was going to do. And then one day I was in class. I was teaching poetry, and I always try to make myself do what I ask my students to do. And I started to write part of this history in a poem. And then suddenly it all opened up in my brain that this was going to be a novel in poems, which I didn't know how to do. I often find myself tasked with doing things that I have no idea how to do, and then I spend a lot of time trying to figure it out. But so I don't always know is my point, but sometimes I do. Sometimes something will appear to me and say, I am going to be a series of essays, or I'm going to be a novel. And I always bow to what the writing tells me, because it has a different and sometimes I think greater intelligence than I do. So I just, okay, you want to be this? I'll figure out how to do it.
Well, well done for being able to trust that voice so well and being so tapped into that intuitive artistic voice, because I think, you know, many writers, including myself from time to time, so many other factors can get in the way, ego or whatever, where we battle that voice and we don't listen to it as closely as we should sometimes to allow it to steer us in certain directions. We sort of try to lasso it and, you know, steer it in another direction.
Believe me, we've all done that, and I've done that too. But you know, then I have to come back to that humble place of this is given to me, and I need to honor it. It's not about it honoring me.
Well said. You know, let's stay on Embers for a moment, your novel and poems, because I believe you've been adapting it as an opera, which is amazing
and crazy. Yes.
if you could talk a little about that, and what gave you the idea to not only shift from, you know, Embers being a novel in poems, but then taking it another step further and then saying, okay, now I'm going to adapt it as an opera.
Well, it's a great case of my writing telling me what to do. And but I, when I was doing readings from the book, actually even before the book was published, I was doing some readings from it. And because it's a novel, there are characters, and the voices just cried out to be performed. And that was so clear to me as I was doing readings. And I thought, all right, well, when I'm done with the book, when the book is published, I have to find a way to theatricalize it. And, I didn't know what that meant. It could have meant a lot of things. And then one day it just came to me that, oh, no, the kind of story this is, there are very dark themes in it. There's sort of melodramatic themes in it. This is opera. And I am not somebody with any kind of music background, so that was a little terrifying to me. But it also felt right. And so I spent a few years actually just trying to find a composer to work with. And I was very lucky. I found a wonderful composer in David Ornette Cherry, who's the son of the jazz trumpeter Don Cherry. And once I heard his music, it was, oh, this is the sound. It won't surprise you to hear that this is not a conventional opera of classical European music. This is an opera that's set in the city of Detroit, and it's about working class people, and it couldn't have a really high classical sound to it. It really needed a more unusual, gritty, jazzy, world music kind of sound, and David's music was just perfect. So he and I have been collaborating for quite some time on the project, and we've done a couple of concert readings. That's where we bring the actors and the singers, and they stand at microphones and perform the text. We did one at the library in 2009, and we did one at Grand Performances in 2011.
Well done.
And we're working toward that full production, which is, it's a lot of work. This is not the kind of project that usually comes out of Los Angeles. We're looking for the right marriage of a theatrical venue and a producer who resonates with our themes. But again, it's a steep learning curve. I seem to always sign on for that.
Right. What do you envision the full production being? How far would you like to take this?
Well, I want to take it all the way. Because of its experimental nature, it kind of lives in the territory of like a Robert Wilson, Philip Glass kind of collaboration. It's very, very different than that. And, of course, they're great and famous artists. But, I would love to have it very widely seen. And, I think its themes are important. Its themes are how... first of all, what things that can happen to women, terrible things that can happen to women, and how institutions can fail women terribly, and then women get blamed for that. But it's also about how do we find forgiveness? How do we channel our anger in productive directions and not self-destructive directions? So I think there's a message that many, many people could relate to in it.
Right. Now, you've also collaborated with choreographers. Do you have any dance that you're bringing into the production at this time or may consider at a future point, or are you keeping it strictly mainly to music and words?
Oh, no. It will be a fully staged production. And I've been working with the director, Michael John Garces, who's the artistic director of Cornerstone Theater. He's been working with us independently. And he's got a great vision for movement and
nice.
Choreography. And, I can't wait to see all the parts brought to life of the piece.
Well done. Well done. You're the creator of Writers at Work here in Los Angeles. Can you talk a little about its history and the services you offer writers and other artists?
Sure. I had the incredible good fortune to come to Los Angeles and be part of an organization called the Woman's Building, which was a multidisciplinary feminist arts organization. And that really inspired me to want to work with adult creative participants and do it in an environment where they're absolutely taken seriously and where I really focus on increasing their skill base and also helping them to cultivate and find an audience. So in 1997, I founded Writers at Work, found a space, opened the door, hung out a shingle, and invited people to participate. And I teach workshops in all the genres that I write in, fiction and creative nonfiction and in poetry. And I've recently started adding some meditation and yoga workshops as well, because those have been really important to me. And the people come because they really are invested in the writing that they want to do. And some participants have been to graduate school but still want to keep a sense of community and to keep growing. Some people never did go to graduate school, but they want the same thing. They want to really develop and hone their work. We celebrated our 15th anniversary last fall, and that was pretty wonderful. And we
Congratulations.
Have lots of current and former participants who have published their own books, as well as articles and stories and poems, and I'm so invested in creation that takes place in community, because I don't believe that isolation is the best environment for creativity, and it allows me to both create but also participate in this kind of creative community with really amazing writers.
Well done, well done. And thank you for being out there, you know, to offer these services to writers and artists, because I wholeheartedly agree with you when you say, in fact, that was one of my notes that I wanted to ask you about, but you pretty much already addressed it, that writers, artists tend to work better or, you know, in different ways when they work in a community setting as opposed to being in isolation. So thank you for that. You're a certified Kundalini yoga teacher, and I'm curious, how has yoga benefited your writing and overall creativity?
Well, I believe that yoga and meditation ask us to be present. They help us to be present. And that's really what writing requires, to be able to show up, be open to the energies that are channeling in, be present in all the moments. You know, every moment where I always tell people, you're not just a writer when you're putting ink on the page. You're a writer in the way that you walk around the world. And being present to the world, you see something, you overhear a conversation, you witness a scene, you observe something taking place. And we're always storing it up, aren't we, to use later and mine in our work. And so the process of meditation and yoga just really hones that attention span, cultivates that notion of being present, and I think deepens the experience of the work. I know for myself, I've taken on deeper themes I sometimes say that when I was a younger writer, I was interested in kind of pulling the scabs off the wounds and talking about the things that nobody wanted to talk about. But as I progressed in my yoga and meditation practice, I became more interested in what can I do to heal the wounds? What can I do to create transformation, not only for myself, but for the people who are reading my work? And now that's a big goal in my work.
Well done. We're getting close to the end of our time, Terry. I was wondering if you could tell the listeners where they can find you online.
TerryWolverton.com is a simple way to do it. That's my website. And from there, there are links to Writers at Work. You could also go to writersatwork.com and go directly to find out about that. And then if you Google me, I'm kind of all over in ways that are constantly amazing to me. But
it's quite an extensive website, by the way. I spent a lot of time on there. You have recordings on there and, links to Writers at Work, and it's really quite wonderful.
Thank you very much.
It's been such an honor to have you on the show today, Terry. Thank you so much. With me today has been literary artist Terry Wolverton. I want to send out a big thank you to our show's sponsor. For all your writerly needs, please contact Tyson Cornell and the lovely Julia at Rare Bird Lit. You can find them online at rarebirdlit.com. The show's theme music is by We Voice Sing. Speaking of which, you can find me, Rich Ferguson, online at wevoicesing.com, YouTube, Facebook. Next week, my guest will be memoirist Erica Ray, talking about her latest book, Evangelical. Maybe I can even get her to talk a little about Bruce Lee and martial arts while we're at it. Until then, thank you all for tuning in to another episode of Poetescape.